This is Leading Lines. I'm Derek Brough. In this episode, we take a look at the work of the New Literacies Alliance. The NLA is a cross-institutional collaboration among librarians to create open educational resources intended to teach information literacy. They have created online lessons for introducing students to search strategies, scholarly conversations, the role of authority in research, citations, reading scientific research, and more. The NLA lessons consist of brief readings, short videos, interactive exercises, and knowledge checks with lots of feedback for students as they move through the lessons. Each lesson takes between 8 and 15 minutes for students to complete, and lessons can be accessed directly through the NLA website or embedded in your local course management system. Leading Lines producer Melissa Mallon caught up with two of the leaders of the New Literacies Alliance at a recent conference. Melissa spoke with Joelle Pitts, who is an instructional design librarian at Kansas State University, and Matthew Upson, Director of Undergraduate Instruction and Outreach Services at the Oklahoma State University Libraries. They talk about the origin of the New Literacies Alliance, the challenges that come with teaching students information literacy, and what's next for the NLA and the lessons they're developing.
I'm Melissa Mallon. I am the Director of Teaching and Learning and the Director of the Education Library at Vanderbilt University. And I'm very pleased to be coming to you dispatched from the Open Education Southern Symposium in Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's the inaugural Open Ed Conference in this region. And I have the pleasure of talking with two of my favorite people, Matt Upson, who is the Director of the Undergraduate Instruction and Outreach Services at Oklahoma State University Libraries.
Hello.
And Joelle Pitts, who is the Instructional Design Librarian and Interim Head of Academic Services at Kansas State University.
Thanks for having us.
And we are here to talk about an amazing project called the New Literacies Alliance, which we will probably shorten to NLA for brevity. And full disclosure, I am a member of the steering committee with Joelle and Matt. This, I think, is a really exciting opportunity to talk more about the project and what NLA is and how it can benefit faculty and students in higher ed. So thank you both for being here. I thought we could start out just talking a little bit about the history of NLA. How did it get started? What are your roles in the program?
So I can kind of kick things off. So I was with the project from the beginning. We started about 6 years ago in what was originally a group of Kansas institutions who were hoping to not recreate the information literacy wheel at our respective institutions, but pool our time and our resources and our shrinking budget dollars in order to create materials that would work across the partner institutions as a sort of leveling platform. So we've since expanded beyond Kansas, of course. We've got, I think, 10 partners now from across the United States, including in Tennessee and Oklahoma, Wisconsin, and others. And we're really focused on building a suite of online lessons that not only focus on information literacy concepts and skills, but really about the critical thinking that's required to engage with the information landscape of today. So I am a member of the steering committee. I've been with the project from the beginning, and I also do instructional design work for the project.
And then I have been with NLA, I guess maybe 3 years now, having been in Kansas previously, knew Joelle. And I honestly can't remember how I heard about NLA, because I don't think I had heard about it, maybe in passing when I was still in Kansas and when I moved to Oklahoma, to Oklahoma State, and not having any tutorials built already and thinking about what our steps were going to be. So we actually hired an instructional designer, Christina Calhoun, who is also working with us on NLA, to design our own stuff at OSU, but quickly we learned, oh, NLA, this is something we could work on. Develop content right alongside them, and then hiring Holly Lukenhaus, who's our first-year experience librarian, having that focus on first-year instruction. So we knew that we had key audience, you know, first-year students primarily at OSU that we wanted to work with and build tutorials for We had an instructional designer that could do in-house stuff as well as help with the instructional design process for NLA. And so really just seeing it as a good opportunity to jump in with both feet and kill as many birds as possible with as few stones.
Efficiency.
That. And so it's been nice. I feel like it's been very productive for us as a team. I think we all really enjoy it. Our administration is on board and very supportive of us being involved. So I joined the steering committee, having a greater role in thinking about planning and directions we want to take.
I would like to loop back to something Joelle mentioned, which was this idea of critical thinking. And the tagline for NLA is critical thinking for complex times. So can you talk a little bit about what within that sort of message speaks to you and what sort of passions or interests are you bringing to the steering committee and future directions?
So I come from an instructional design background, and so I really nerd out when it comes to brain-based learning and some of the neuroscience behind learning. And so part of what makes this project really meaningful for me is the critical thinking piece, because we can essentially combine some of the cognitive and behavioral elements of information literacy, so the skills and behaviors we want information literate individuals to know and to do, with the affective and metacognitive elements of learning. And when we combine those two, or at least align those two sides of the learning coin, we can more effectively facilitate the long-term transfer of information in the brain. So that's what I really get excited about, is when we create lessons that not only teach concepts, but require or at least ask students to think about and reflect on how those issues impact them, what it means to them, why they value things the way that they do. Those are really the issues, I think, that make the content meaningful for the student and then facilitates that deeper learning.
When we were bouncing around ideas for the tagline, I can't remember some of the other versions we had, but what...
We're pretty terrible.
do you have an example of one that you can remember? A terrible one.
I blocked them out.
I think I came up with some fairly crass ones as well. Like, that's just usually what I do. But what stands out to me about this one is the practical nature of it. So it's not, critical thinking for success in your specific course title. Right. It is thinking about how to be successful in society, as a citizen, as a professional, as a student. We always talk to students about how we think it's easier. Well, it is easier to access more information than ever before, but no one thinks about, or fewer people think about, the complexity of actually trying to navigate that information, whether to evaluate it, how to use it, how to use it ethically, how to produce and share new information. And so that piece, that complexity, the practicality of it is what stands out for me, and I think is important. As we think about what our mission and vision are, I think that really stands out. And it's part of what we're doing anyway. It is part of our mission. It just maybe hasn't been stated as such. It's not just for academic purposes, not just for classroom success. It is much broader than that, and that's really what we're trying to do.
So let's talk a little bit about what the lessons look like and some of the content. So something that I find to be one of the biggest benefits of NLA is that the lessons are institutionally agnostic, I guess we could say, in that anyone anywhere can use them. They're not branded with any kind of, university branding. And I like what you said, Matt, that it is more than just you can use this for your course because this is one thing that you need to do in this course. There are bigger concepts, bigger issues that people can take throughout any academic program into real life, quote unquote, and just being a good critical thinker and citizen of the world. So what sort of lessons have you been developing, and how do you decide how to develop a lesson or what content you're going to include?
I think lots of discussions with the group, not just the steering committee, but with the group as a whole. For all the things we've said about the practicality of it, life outside academia, a lot of the conversations lead to ideas that stem from what's going on at our individual institutions, what are these commonly seen needs. So thinking about all the instructional context we have might drive what we want to do with NLA. And shifting from that classroom-based or curriculum-based content across the board to more of this, well, what skills do they need to just be successful? Mm-hmm. I think that helps us also apply it to high schools, public library settings, really anyone who wants to deliver or receive education in these areas. They're not limited. So those conversations with the group, I think we brainstorm a lot of ideas and then narrow it down in a very, I think, efficient manner. And it works. Everyone feels like their voice is heard. So I know those brainstorming sessions are really valuable to me in limiting some of these ideas, because there's so many things that we want to do.
Yeah.
And it's a question of prioritizing this stuff and what's valuable to the most people, according to the group.
I would just echo everything Matt just said. And I'd also just add that the way that we make decisions around what content and what projects to work on really does happen, I think, in sort of an egalitarian way, which fosters that excitement and the buy-in from our partner institutions, whether they have five individuals who participate on the working group or whether they have one, that the nature of the way that we brainstorm really lends itself to the open nature of the project. And I would say, too, that even at the lesson level, so when we decide we're going to tackle a particular content area, we gather a small group of what we call a lesson group or working group, which is usually between three and five individuals. And even then, we have a similar brainstorming process that happens where we decide on learning outcomes, we decide what we want students to be able to do and to exhibit in terms of skills and behaviors at the end of the lesson. So it really, these lessons take an incredible amount of work and cognitive brain power to make them happen. But I think it results in a better end product, a better lesson for the students.
And a nice package, right? Because they're, like you said, there are the learning outcomes, there's the assessment piece built in, so faculty or librarians that are using the lessons do not have to recreate anything, really, unless they want to supplement what's already there. So that's a nice thing, too.
And having that process, I know for me, is really beneficial, especially intentionally, consciously working toward outcomes, because our instructional designer at OSU will tell you, I tend to just, like, I just get excited and I rush in and I want to do all these things. And I guess on some level, internally, I have these outcomes are what I want students to walk away with. But until I state those, it's just kind of this formless chunk of information I want to deliver. And as a group especially, I can't just rush ahead and not kind of disclose, well, here's what I want to do. So having everyone work on that really shapes a lesson, especially when it needs to be 8 to 15 minutes long. We can't just go off on all these tangents. And it really keeps it structured and compact and efficient. And that process is really, it's beneficial to me to kind of keep my own tendencies in check.
So with all of this brain power and, I'm going to just say, love that goes into the creation of these lessons, is there one that you feel particularly proud of or that you are maybe a little bit more excited about than some of the others?
So I have had my hand in a number of these, either as a designer or just as a content contributor. And as an instructional designer, these things are sort of like my children in a way. You know, like I spend so much time and effort sort of building them up from nothing, and then they go out into the world and, you know, I watch how that happens. So in one way, I have an attachment to all of my lessons that I've worked on.
As a good parent does,
as one does, right? But I think the one that probably stands out to me the most, and maybe which has stretched me the most as a designer, is the fake news or the investigative searching lesson that is currently under development. So Matt also works on that one, and he can, I think, speak to this as well. But that is a topic that librarians in general have not typically broached in their instruction practices until now. So we didn't really have a lot to draw from in terms of personal experiences or pedagogy for in-class instruction and so on. So that has really been a challenge to not only narrow that whole topic down into something that can fit into an 8 to 15 minute lesson, but to also navigate some of the politics and some of the issues that go around producing content that will in some ways be polarizing for our students and maybe even for our faculty and administrators also. So, you know, it has not gone out into the world yet, but it's one that is sort of forefront in my brain as the most cognitively and potentially impactful.
Yeah, it is a topic that is certainly fraught with a lot of emotion, and I know you've incorporated that somewhat into the lesson, right?
Yeah, so building off of, I feel like I say this guy's name all the time now, Mike Caulfield's work, and I do say his name all the time because I think he does some great things, and he's just one of many, but what we've really drawn on or drawn from is his web literacy open textbook. And so the moves, the strategies that he details there, which I know he's drawn from others as well, has really been the basis for this and really informed the lesson. Yeah, thinking about emotions and my own internal and I guess our unit discussions at Oklahoma State about librarian neutrality and what is our role in discussing this kind of content on campus and realizing that, yeah, we have very non-neutral intentions in mind. And this came up today in our presentation, but how do we deliver this information in a lesson in as objective a manner as possible so as not to turn off students who may disagree, but really getting everyone to see that emotions are often a driving factor in believing information and sharing information that may not be accurate. And how do we get students to just think about that in their own information seeking and consumption process? I mean, how do they deal with that effectively? And then going on to the other steps of actually, you know, being able to track something down and fact check it and not seeing fact checking as some type of liberal agenda, which I know, like fake news has certain connotations, and so this fact-checking, how do we get students past that and thinking about their emotions, talking to each other, investigating information, and learning how to triangulate sources to verify it? And I know it's going to be complicated, but I think I'm the most hopeful about this lesson.
That's something that I'm kind of interested in talking with you a little bit more. The idea of the application of the lessons and how they could be incorporated into the classroom. Do you have an example of that or how, if you were talking to a faculty member trying to describe a way that these lessons could be used, how might you go about that?
One of the ways that we have really started using the lessons in earnest at K-State is embedding the lessons through the use of LTI links into our learning management system courses. So a librarian will work with a faculty member, typically be added to their course as an instructor or a librarian, and then we will embed those lessons into the course for students to take as required coursework. So the instructors are able to assign whatever point levels they want. So some of them choose 5, some of them choose 100. You know, it's really up to them in terms of what kind of point value they want to assign to those. But essentially, we sync them with the course gradebook, the students take them as homework, and then when our librarians then go in and teach information literacy sessions, they can reasonably assume, if the students have done the work, done the homework, that all of them are at a certain baseline in terms of information literacy skills and abilities. So they can use the class time that they have in a more potentially meaningful and impactful way.
We're trying to do this fact-checking piece and like how to use something like Google, something they're familiar with, in better, more efficient, more academic ways. How do you think about information now as a student in different ways? And so this is a perfect venue for this kind of lesson. We're never going to get into all these sections. And so as we progress, something else that's going on campus is we now have some movement on an information literacy gen ed requirement. And so how can NLA really fit in here and help various courses meet that requirement? And so, again, fitting that fact-checking lesson into first-year seminars, I think, is just a very natural fit, and it's going to be an easy sell for most instructors.
So I'd like to shift gears just a little bit. We are here at this Open Education Conference, and we're hearing a lot about open pedagogy and OER and lots of different ways that librarians and faculty can work together to share information and learning objects. So I just wondered, because NLA is so open, and that's one of the big goals of this project, is to be available for anyone in any country in the world, could you talk just a little bit about your own philosophy with open education and open pedagogy and how you see NLA fitting into that bigger conversation?
I think students, when you describe open education to students, in many instances, they're not like, oh, this is amazing, this makes a lot of sense, except maybe in the case of textbooks. When you start talking about OER, they're just like, well, isn't that the internet? Like everything's free to use. And so the expectation is there. I think a lot of us have an expectation how is the use of digital information limited if it's not open? And so I think with the expectation from students, one of our duties as information providers or tour guides, direction pointers, whatever we are.
Where's the stapler answers?
Or, yeah, replacing the printer paper. What is our duty in terms of producing or guiding students to open content? And I think that's very important. I'm glad that, I don't know if at the time I had the opportunity to jump on board to NLA, if it wasn't open, I would have said, if I was at a point in my career where I would have said, well, this isn't worth my time. And I want to think, I'd like to believe that I would have said, no, suggested, hey, let's make this open. Really over the past 3 years, I think I've developed quite a bit as a professional, and become more adamant about the creation of open resources. And then as far as open pedagogy goes, I think that's just such a, we can't just provide these create and provide the resources. We have to work to establish a better pedagogical approach to using them. And we can't just replace traditional textbooks with open textbooks and expect anything to change other than the fact that they can now have textbooks and that might benefit them. But how are we going to use this material differently? How can students be a part of this process? And so we're experimenting in some of our classes now with ways that students can demonstrate their understanding and build their knowledge and understanding in such a way that it can be shared with other students. It can be continued to be developed by students on down the line, and they can play a greater role in deciding what their education looks like. I think that's the real potential for me. And, I don't know if we've really talked about, we have students who have participated in NLA in a variety of ways. Maybe they're testing lessons. Maybe they're being interviewed for video. But, I don't know if Joelle has thought about what does open pedagogy really mean for NLA and how do we get students involved in more innovative ways. And it's not something I thought about until 25 seconds ago.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. We have a pretty open policy in terms of who's a partner. I don't see why we couldn't have students.
Yeah, I love that idea. Mm-hmm. And that whole philosophy of students as producers and content creators, this could be a really exciting way to push that forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to build off what Matt said, yeah. I think there are a lot of issues just in our current culture and society right now that necessitate the use of open educational resources, open textbooks, and so on. And the student debt crisis and the overall increase in the cost of college is just one of those. So I think it is one way that libraries and librarians can carve a niche for ourselves and remain relevant in this era is to focus on access to information in a variety of ways, and OER is one of them.
Yeah, great. So we've talked a little bit about moving forward, possible lessons, maybe having students, help with the content creation. What else is next for NLA? Do you have, we've talked about this as a steering committee. We're working on that elusive mission and vision statement. But what are your goals for the future?
So I think there are so many possibilities, and one of the things that I think is really exciting about this project is all of the different ways we could go mm-hmm. with it. So some of the ideas that we've thrown around are, based on the increasing rate of international usage, perhaps translating some of the lesson content into various languages.
Which, do you know off the top of your head how many different countries?
On Friday, I counted 81 countries.
81 countries, wow.
Yeah, which is really exciting. Yeah. It's really fantastic. So perhaps translating the lessons. Actually, at this conference, we had a request for broader marketing. Mm-hmm. And then marketing the project, getting the word out about the project is something we've talked about even, for the last couple of years here. How do we get the word out? So I think focusing on marketing. We always, I think, are focused on assessment, so we want to make sure that the lessons are useful and continue to be useful in terms of student learning outcomes. We want to make sure that they're effective in that way. So I think those are some of the bigger issues. We, of course, would love to pursue some extramural funding opportunities to grow that way as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking ways to manage growth, because we have been, our timeline and productivity has been limited over the past few months. due to circumstances that, I mean, it's just happened. And what is that? It's been interesting to see how limited we are, especially when our fearless leader, Joelle, is, when her time is restricted. And so how do we empower other members, kind of lead, take the charge, and, you know, how many other new members? We've talked about how to onboard members in the past, and no one's paying a membership fee, but should we be asking, what do you want to get out of this? What can you offer to NLA? What are some ideas and strategies you have? So figuring out how to grow responsibly and sustainably and without it becoming too unwieldy, because I think that it is, I think we're right at a point where if everyone who were involved with NLA was able to and did participate in every single meeting, it potentially would be unwieldy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that mean for us if we want to set a standard of, you know, saying we want to produce this many lessons a year or semester? What do we need to do that? What are expectations? And again, how do we do that in such a way that it doesn't become just a mess for communication, since we are all at different institutions?
And to remember that everyone's giving their own time for this, right? It is,
yes,
you know, an extra piece. But the reason I was so drawn to working with you is that you're just so passionate about it, and it is such a great product that is available to so many people in so many different ways, and the impact and reach of the lessons is huge. So from what I have experienced, you have that passion and care for this that is necessary to make it sustainable and figure out, you know, what it looks like down the road. And it seems as though, you know, just at this conference, we've talked a lot about OER and the huge growth potential there. So this fits right in, and I think that will help with the sustainability down the line.
I think we can be more intentional about, hey, this is something that is directly meeting the mission of the university,
mm-hmm,
in a very broad fashion. But since it is something that's not written into all of our job descriptions, it tends to kind of not be at the bottom of priorities, but it's not something that where does it fit in for everyone?
Right.
And I think for those of us with land grant missions or outreach missions that are made clear in library mission or university mission statements, we could easily talk to administrators about how this really plays into that role and see it bumped up on our list of priorities, not just individually, but institutionally, and especially as we continue to get statistics in and endeavor to expand out past English-speaking interested populations. I think that just increases the inevitability of getting more people on board at our institutions and supporting this.
Yeah, the support is a big piece, right? That needs to be there. So if you were to have one takeaway for a librarian or a faculty member out there, or an administrator, or a student, any of our various stakeholders, that you would want to give them about NLA, we have, as the NLA as a group has an elevator pitch, but if you had to pick your one piece that you just wanted to make sure people know about this project, what would it be?
If you're struggling, and especially, you know, and I've been in this position before, where you are maybe a solo librarian, you don't have a support staff, maybe your university doesn't have an instructional designer or any type of multimedia production team, and you are alone and you're trying your hardest to deliver instruction, just remember you are not alone. We are there to help. You know, if you have ideas, we want to hear from you. If we have something that is beneficial to you, use it. But you can, I mean, you have a voice in this. That's the beauty of open. You can do whatever you want with it. You can talk to us about how you want to use it. You can talk to us about how you want to change something or create something new. So I don't know if that was one thing, but
no, that's good.
You're not alone.
Yeah, you're not alone. I love it. How about you, Joelle?
I think I would reemphasize the agnostic nature of the lessons. So Melissa mentioned that they're institution agnostic, so we don't brand them other than the NLA logo. But they're also technology and vendor agnostic. And so they get at the basics of information literacy, not just for the particular class that they're used in or even for the program that they might be used in, but skills that will last a lifetime. So they facilitate lifelong learning would be my one-liner for you.
I like it very much. So that's a good sort of practitioner focus and student focus. So as we're wrapping up at the end here, we do always have one question that we ask our illustrious guests on the Leading Lions podcast, which is your favorite analog educational technology.
I don't know if this counts as a tool, but it's one of the pedagogical ways I have taught before that has resonated with me the most, and the students that I work with have consistently remembered. And this is not even in library land. This is pre-library land for me. But I used I had a board with a nail.
Okay.
And in one hand I had a hammer, and in one hand I had a banana. And I asked the students which one would be more effective at pounding the nail into the board. And of course they said the hammer. Right? So I used that as, and in some instances I actually attempted to use both tools to demonstrate, or had them use the tools to demonstrate the effectiveness. But it was one way to illustrate that tools matter,
mm-hmm.
and choosing your tools deliberately based on the context that you are aiming for is important. And so it was sort of a learning by doing activity that in an analog way was really impactful.
I love that answer so much. And I think that without going back and listening to every podcast episode, I can pretty safely say no one's ever said a banana. So that is perfect.
Yeah, I should have gone first. Follow that. I know. I guess it's a combination of some type of writing utensil on a surface,
mm-hmm.
and really being able to not just jot something down for your own purposes or reflection, although that's very important for you to be able to visualize something or abstract something, but also teaching others, being able to demonstrate in a manner other than just spoken word. And I'm a big comics fan, and
mm-hmm.
so being able to put a diagram on paper or draw out some type of sequence of events or occurrences, I think is very useful. And so that's something we've been, a utensil and a surface, whether
mm-hmm.
it's a stick and dirt or a pencil and paper or your finger and a touch screen, and being able to translate thought into something visual is, I think, incredibly valuable. And or a banana.
Or a banana.
A mush banana at a wall. I can just smear banana on a wall.
So is there anything else that you would like to make sure we know about in LA, or anything that you want to put out there in the world?
Well, an idea came up in the presentation, increased ways for feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So, right now, let us know what you think and tell us what's working, how you're using lessons, any suggestions for the future, but we may be able to implement some mechanism for, the person suggested this morning a wiki option, for more collaborative efforts on maybe lesson idea building.
I really like the idea of a wiki too, and the formation of a community mm-hmm. around this project. So we have our 10 partner institutions, we have our librarians and instructional designers who work on the project, kind of day in and day out. But I would love to have more feedback from the community, the library community and the ed tech community too. That would be awesome.
That's fantastic. Thank you both so much, Joelle and Matt, for taking the time to talk with me about the New Literacies Alliance. And I'm really excited to see where this goes from here. And I know that there's going to be a lot of exciting updates coming soon. So we will share the website so everyone has that. Keep a watch there. We've thrown around creating a hashtag, so that might happen. But in the meantime, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Joelle Pitts, Instructional Design Librarian at Kansas State, and Matthew Upson, Director of Undergraduate Instruction and Outreach Services at the Oklahoma State Libraries. Thanks to Melissa Mallon, one of my favorite librarians, for talking with Joelle and Matt, and for Melissa's work with the NLA and at Vanderbilt fostering information literacy. You may have noticed that this is our 50th episode of Leading Lines. I'm having a hard time believing that we've produced so many episodes. I remember a few years ago having the idea for an interview-based podcast about educational technology. I thought I might be able to put together maybe an 8-episode season, 4 featuring Vanderbilt colleagues and 4 featuring people outside of Vanderbilt I knew to be doing really interesting things with ed tech. That seemed ambitious at the time, which is why it didn't happen. I didn't move forward with the project until that day a few years ago that several of us working in EdTech at Vanderbilt were in a meeting together about something else, and my colleague John Sloop tossed out an idea for an EdTech podcast. Once I realized that I might have some partners on campus doing this, we got moving. Once we got the team together, we were off and running, and now 2.5 years later, we've produced 50 episodes with more to come. I'm proud of what we've built with Leading Lines. I look forward to new interviews, new ideas, and new directions for educational technology in the new year. To listen to any of our 50 episodes thus far, visit our website, leadinglinespod.com. To make sure to catch new episodes, you can subscribe to Leading Lines in your favorite podcast app. And if you've got a minute, please leave us a review on iTunes. That helps other people find the podcast. Leading Lines is produced by the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications at the Vanderbilt Libraries, and the Associate Provost for Education Development and Technologies. This episode was edited by Melissa Mallon and Rhett McDaniel. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month. I'm your host, Derek Bruff. Thanks for listening.